supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
Mischief Night took a destructive turn during the 1980s when teens used spray paint and lit fires instead of throwing eggs. In 1991, 120 fires broke out in Camden. The tradition seems to have died out since then, as new immigrant and ethnic groups have moved into the city. For WHYY News, I'm Sarah Weitz-Kotacek.
In sports, Flyers take on the Hurricanes at the Wells Fargo Center tonight at 7. This is WHYY.
Welcome to You Bet Your Garden. I'm your host, Mike McGrath. Coming up later in the show, it's a, quote, ornamental grass we get a lot of questions about. But Mondo grass, a.k.a. monkey grass, is not a grass of any kind. We'll tell you what it is and what it's good for, including its potential use as a no-mow lawn, when we get to the question of the week. But it's a phone call show, cats and kittens, and you know what that means. In the meantime, we're taking that heaping helping at 1-888-346-9499. Mac, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, Mac. Mike. Nice to talk to you.
Yes, don't talk to yourself, Mac. Talk to me.
I'll try to do that.
Where are you, sir?
I'm actually right now in New York, but I'm calling about my garden in Wellfleet, Massachusetts.
Oh, okay. Are you in New York City?
In New York City, the Big Apple.
That's right. Okay. Small town boy visits the Big Apple.
Right.
Don't look up at the buildings, Mac. They'll try to lift your wallet if you look... Okay, so what about your garden back in Massachusetts?
Well, you had a call a couple of weeks ago from someone in Maryland, I think, who had a tree going dormant in the summer, late summer. And that called to mind an experience we've had on Cape Cod. And I wondered whether his issue might not have been related to Hurricane Irene. Where I live, the Hurricane Irene was a heavy windstorm. It came with no rain, but it sweeps up salt and in the wind, and it caused a number of deciduous trees to turn brown and drop their leaves. And in fact, right now, an ornamental pear tree beside my house has come back into blossom, which it shouldn't do in after April or May.
And that's exactly, I think, what that other caller was talking about. Some trees had prematurely dropped their leaves.
Right.
Some spring bloomers, specifically Bradford pears, were blooming in the fall. And it was like, is this a natural result of a natural disaster? Or is somehow the Book of Revelations coming, coming to play in my garden?
Well, I'm on the side of natural disasters. I remember Hurricane Bob in 1991, which was very similar. It was a dry hurricane on Cape Cod. It was really spooky for a couple of weeks after. Everything went brown, yellow. The atmosphere even was sort of yellowish. And then all the deciduous trees around us went dormant. And in October, when it was unusually warm, we had apple trees in blossom and Bradford pear and so forth and so on. So I think the stress of the hurricane winds, especially when there's no rain to wash off the salt that's in the winds, can cause dormancy.
Dry hurricane. I don't know that that's an expression I've ever heard before, but I guess she was just out of water by the time she got to you guys?
I guess so, or we were on a fringe. It was certainly a stronger storm, Bob, than the Irene this year. But
right, and that salt can be so damaging to plants. Well, this was the most wretched summer for gardening and plants I can remember. As we keep talking about the stressed landscapes, which we're experiencing all over the country, for God's sake, people, don't try to help these poor plants. Don't feed the trees in the fall, thinking that somehow they need food now to help them get through the winter. That's just going to send them another sucker punch coming in from a third side that they weren't watching. And
right.
Don't do any unnecessary pruning. Keep wood mulch away from them. And I guess, you know, the words trust in nature, but also realize that, you know, nature occasionally has this tendency to walk up to the blackboard and erase everything that's been written there before.
Yes, indeed.
But I hope your trees do well. I hope they survive this experience. But this has been, you know, I just want it to be done. You know, I just want to, you know, send the right kind of ritual sacrifice up to get our old weather back just for a year. You know, a gentle spring, a hot summer, a cool fall. You know, just one last time, Mother Nature, so that we can, you know, our children can remember it.
Oh, man.
All right. Well, I think, you know, your theory with the salt in your area, that's a tremendous stressor. I think trees are acting wacky all over the country, and the lesson to take away is don't stress them any further. Don't feed them, don't prune them, don't mulch them, don't look too hard at them. Just hope for decent weather.
Good spring.
All right, Mac, you take good care of your trees, pal.
Thanks much. Bye-bye.
Take care. 1-888-346-9499. Laura, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, Mike. I love your show. Since I found you a few months ago, I'm a devoted listener.
Why, thank you, Laura. Where are you?
I'm in Camarillo, California.
Oh, so you listen to us on the Santa Barbara station.
Yes.
Excellent. Yes, we love being on in California. And, you know, you guys have a reputation for being laid back and just hanging out. But we hear from a large number of California listeners, so that's just great. We love that contact over there.
I appreciate your help.
What can we do for you?
Well, I have a question that I hadn't heard addressed, and maybe I just missed it, but I was wondering what you think about ladybugs as a solution to. I have leaves on really two of my main plants, the lantana and the rosebush, are just getting decimated. I can't see that there's anything on them, that there's no black bugs or white flies or anything, but they're all lacework. And I was wondering what you thought about releasing some ladybugs to see what they could do.
Ladybugs are an interesting beneficial insect. I don't think they're going to solve your problem.
Okay.
A lot of times school teachers will release ladybugs or people will buy ladybugs. And the package will arrive, and they'll open it up in the garden, and they'll just shake the ladybugs around, and the ladybugs all fly away.
Right.
Because it's daytime, which is when ladybugs fly, and they're dehydrated from their travels and from storage. So if you buy ladybugs, whether you buy the mail order from a local very hip garden center, what you do is you take them home, you wait till the sun goes down, and this is one of the only times you wet down your garden in the evening.
Okay.
You want to give all the leaves of your plants a really good soaking. And then when that's done, you go around and you take the box or bag of ladybugs and you sprinkle a few of them on every plant, making sure that they all drop onto wet plants.
Okay.
Ladybugs won't fly at night, so they really can't go anywhere. They will find water on your plants, so that's going to be very refreshing for them. And then if they do find the kind of pests they prey upon, well, then it's like, you know, finding a nice house in a good school district that's, you know, an easy commute to work. Why would they not stay?
Okay.
But they need that downtime. They need to be released in the dark. They desperately need that moisture. And they need insect prey, which for ladybugs is aphids, mealybugs, and other kind of soft-bodied pests, but especially aphids.
Okay.
Now you're scaring me when you describe your leaves becoming lace-like, because calls to mind, at least here on the East Coast, one of the scarab beetles, like Japanese beetles or night-flying Asiatic beetles, that lacy effect where all of the leaf is eaten but all of the veins are left behind, is very distinctive for those kind of scarab beetles. And I know California has been working for decades to keep Japanese beetles out. You need to either go online or go to a hip or independent garden center, and you have a choice of two organic pesticides to spray on the leaves. Okay. One would be neem, N-E-E-M. That's actually distilled from the seeds of a tropical tree. And neem is tremendous because it's first a feeding deterrent. When you spray it on the leaves of plants that are under attack and insects come, they're deterred from feeding. But if they insist, the neem will kill them. Okay. So it's kind of almost like you're warning them away first. The other, which might be more available in a local garden center, not one of the big box stores, but a hip independent garden center, would be one of the spinosads. S-P-I-N-S-O-A-D. And these are naturally occurring soil organisms. And both neem and the spinosads act the same way. They're harmless to humans in the environment. You spray them on the leaves of the plants you want to protect, and they only harm insects that then eat those leaves. Okay. So, for instance, a monarch butterfly could stop and rest on a sprayed leaf. But because the butterfly isn't defoliating your plants, they fly away unharmed. And when you have a situation like this where you're paying attention and you just can't see what's eating your plants, that's the way to go, is spray them with these feeding deterrent / insecticides that are safe for the environment.
Oh, my goodness. I appreciate your help so much.
Oh, my pleasure, Laura. We love being on there in California.
Thank you very much.
All right, you take care.
You too. Bye-bye.
Well, it's time for me to take a little break and remind everybody that fall is the time for garlic and spring bulb planting, cool season lawn planting and feeding, and wailing and rending of garments for Phillies fans. But fall is not the time for the pruning of anything, or apparently for victory parades down Broad Street. But don't you go hiding the pruners or saying just wait till next year just yet, because we'll be right back with more of your fabulous phone calls and a discussion on the unique ornamental, perhaps even lawn substitute known as Mondo grass. I'm Mondo Mike McGrath, and this is You Bet Your Garden.
This is WHYY.
The Geographical Society of Philadelphia supports WHYY and will host a week-long festival, the first annual GeoFest, featuring films, feasts, and discussions with explorers and travelers. GeoFest runs November 6th through 12th at various locations in Philadelphia and the Main Line. Guests include La Colombe's Todd Carmichael and endurance swimmer Diana Nyad. Tickets and information online at geographicalsociety.org or 610-649-5220. WHYY programming is supported by the teachers and education support professionals of the Pennsylvania State Education Association, educating all children for a bright future. We are PSEA, providing the power of a great education.
Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden. I'm your host, Mike McGrath. Coming up later in the show, Mondo grass. It's not a grass of any kind, but some people can actually use it as an interesting no-mow lawn substitute. It can also be an interesting ornamental. We'll discuss Mondo grass in the question of the week. Now it's lots of your fascinating phone calls. At 1-888-346-9499. Catherine, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Well, thank you. It's good to talk to you.
It's good to talk to you, too, Catherine. Where are you?
I'm in Edmond, Oklahoma, which is a northern suburb of Oklahoma City.
I know it very well. Some of our fiercest listeners are in the Oklahoma City area. So what can we do for you?
Well, so I've planted muscari and daffodils and tulips and stuff all over the, you know, the yard for years, and don't expect to see them in September. And sometime mid-September, when it started to cool off here, you know, cool off like 85 degrees, I started saying, "Hey, isn't that like muscari leaves popping up out of the ground. Oh, it's just a fluke. So it's just that one little spot. And then a week later, I'd see more somewhere else. Now they're all over the place. They look pathetic. They don't, you know, they look very spent and sad. I dug up one of the bulbs. It's kind of, it's not mushy, but if it were like an onion, I wouldn't buy it. So it's not firm and nice. I have no idea what's going on. Any ideas?
Yes. Now, when you say muscari, you probably mean grape hyacinth?
Yes.
Yes, which I love. They are such amazing plants in the spring.
And oh, it's so fun.
This does not happen often, but I remember it happened to me many years ago, and I called Sally Ferguson, who is the kind of the information officer for the Dutch bulb growers in America.
Right, right.
And she said, oh, that's perfectly normal, and that will happen in some years. Not all the time, but in some years, and only certain spring bulbs. You know, for instance, you're not seeing daffodil leaves.
Well, yeah, that's my thing, is I thought it's only the grape hyacinths.
Right.
Yeah, I thought, how weird. Why not anything else?
Well, that's good.
Oh.
That's good, because if you saw daffodil leaves or you saw tulip leaves, then you would get a false bloom. Then your bulbs had been through the kind of weather experience. And this does happen sometimes. You notice that every year they put the signs up in garden centers earlier. Spring bulb planting time is here.
Right.
You know, it's like, you know, Christmas starts the day after Halloween. But, you know, maybe this year, maybe we can start at October 15th. We can start the selling the Christmas. So that they're selling spring bulbs earlier and earlier. And I'm always fearful that people are going to buy them and plant them.
Right.
Because
my understanding down here, tell me if I'm right, is, I don't know about anyone else in the country, my guidelines are like Halloween to Thanksgiving. Is that
perfect.
At all right?
That's absolutely perfect.
Oh, okay. Good.
Most people in most areas of the country, except the far north, if they at least wait till Halloween, they should escape any chance of a false bloom. The warmer your climate, the more you should wait till closer to Thanksgiving. But what can happen if you put them in the ground in July, and then we have an unusual cool spell, although I don't know that you can call any weather unusual anymore.
No, it's too weird.
You know, you have and we've had these. Northern California, I found out, unfortunately, has them every summer, for the entire summer. But if we get a really cool August, say, and then it warms up again, sometimes the bulbs think that was winter, and they will sprout, especially bulbs that were planted super early. And that can wreak havoc, because there's only one flower inside each of those bulbs,
and that's how you get.
And it's already there. So if it comes up this year, whether it even gets to show itself or not, if it starts to get pushed up, it's shot. Grape hyacinth are unusual in that it is not at all uncommon, and there's nothing wrong for them to put their leaves up in the fall and for those leaves to just sit on the ground all fall and all winter, and there's no reason to believe you won't get a good grape hyacinth show in the spring. The problem is, as you note, is the leaves don't look very attractive right now, but you can't mess with them. You can't cut them off. You don't want to mulch them or anything. After all of your plants go dormant, it might be a nice idea to put down an inch of shredded leaves around them, just so you don't have to look at those pitiful things. But this is apparently this is apparently part of their life cycle, and I believe it does have to do with stressful summers. And interestingly enough, I told you it happened to me, it must have been 15 years ago. This year it happened again. So whatever is making your grape hyacinth pop its leaves in the quote fall made mine do it in Pennsylvania as well, because we had hideous weather extremes as well. But for grape hyacinth, perfectly normal, nothing's wrong, don't dig any more up.
Cool. Yeah, I only dug one up just to say, wait, is this a grape hyacinth? And, you know, just to make sure.
Well, they should be fine in the spring. And you probably set a lot of people's minds at ease.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much.
All right, my pleasure. Take care.
You too. Bye.
1-888-346-9499. B, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
How you doing, Mike?
I'm doing good, B. How are you?
I'm fine and grateful for this great show. I never miss it.
Oh, well, thank you so much. Where do you listen to us?
I'm in Huntington Valley, Pennsylvania.
Oh, right. Very good. That's a beautiful area out there just outside of Philly.
Yes, true.
So what can we do for B in Huntington Valley?
All right. I've got a 6-foot-tall Floribunda tree rose, Playboy, I think it's called, and it's been very happily growing in a large 16-by-16 container. I'm intending to bring it into an unheated, attached, frost-free garage to winter over. I'm wondering what suggestions have you to help me keep it in good shape so I can put it out again next spring.
Now, is there no place for this in the ground?
I can't hardly stand the thought of digging another big hole. And I kind of thought that this would be better protected in the garage than in the ground. What's your feeling?
Oh, well, no. I mean, there's plants love to have their roots below the frost line.
Uh-huh.
There's nothing special about this rose that would make it non-winter hardy in our area in the ground, is there?
Probably not, except that I haven't dug a hole that big for it. You think I would have put it in the ground?
Well, the smart would, and but obviously you like growing it in a container.
I do, because I can move it about.
Okay. The smart money, your best chance of survival, is, you know, and by the way, B, I don't dig big holes. You know, there's got to be a high school kid or somebody on the block that you can give a couple of bucks to dig a big hole. But one trick that may appeal to you is you don't have to take it out of its container.
Mm-hmm.
All you got to do is dig a big enough hole, drop the container in the ground so that the lip is below the soil line, mm-hmm. and then fill in around it with the reserve dirt, ignore it over the winter, although in the dead of winter, you know, January or February, if you want, you can go out and give it a little pruning. That's one of the perfect times a year to prune it. The other time is in the spring, just as it resumes growth. Don't prune it now.
No.
And then in the spring, you could lift it up or get that kid to come back and lift it up again and resume growing it in a container.
Mm-hmm.
But that is, you know, provided the container's plastic.
Yeah.
Right. So you can't do that with terracotta or one of those fancy ceramic things that would break. But that is essentially what garden centers do.
With the pot.
Yeah, they actually bury the pot because they don't want the roots to start growing into the surrounding soil. They want the plant to remain in the container because that's how they're going to sell it. And in your case, that's how they're going to display it.
Mm-hmm.
But they know that those roots need to be below the soil line for it to survive winter. Second best is to take a plant that size, turn it on its side, roll it against a non-south-facing side of your home.
Non-south.
Non-south, because you don't want it heating up and cooling off. And then as your deciduous trees drop, have a leaf blower on a reverse setting at the ready. Suck up the leaves with the leaf blower on reverse. They go through a collection bag. They get shredded.
Mm-hmm.
And then you totally cover that rose with like 6 inches of shredded leaves all around. Maybe you get like 3-4 inches, and then you stretch some chicken wire or something over top, and then you cover that with more leaves. Now, the third option is to take it to an area that will stay, between 35 and 45 degrees the entire winter.
Yeah, that's pretty much my garage situation.
But will you be using the garage?
No, it's well, it's got a bunch of junk in it.
Okay, so it's, you know, I would imagine, what would you guess? 70% of the garages in America probably don't have room for a car.
Oh, I would say that was...
That's low ball?
Yeah, on the low side.
So it's not heated.
Uh-huh.
Right?
Right.
But it
gets the ambient heating from the house.
So if you put a bucket of water out there, no ice forms.
No, it won't freeze.
Okay. It doesn't sound like a terrible place at all. Mm-hmm. Put it in the, you know, make sure it's not near heat and not near cold. So you got a warm house on one side, and you got a cold world on the other side.
Right.
I leave it in the middle.
Yeah. Okay.
But the best thing to do with these plants and containers is sink the container in the ground if you can.
Okay. All right.
Okay.
I appreciate it.
All right. Good luck, B.
Thank you.
1-888-346-9499. Jerry, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
How you doing, Mike?
I'm doing good, Jerry. How are you, sir?
Just fine.
Where is Jerry fine?
Cambridge City, Indiana.
Cambridge City. Now, where in Indiana is that?
That's 45 miles east of Indianapolis. 45 or 50 miles east of Indianapolis.
Okay, closer to us. All right, what can we do for Jerry in Cambridge City, Indiana?
Looking to see if this will be a good time to set out some shagbark hickory trees.
Oh, what a beautiful tree. And you're asking, is this a good time of year to plant them?
Yes.
Yeah, now, do you have planting stock now, Jerry?
No, I don't.
Do you have a place to get them?
I'm going to order them out of catalogs.
Yeah, but see, will they ship them to you?
Well, that's one thing we'll consider, too. I don't know.
Well, here's the story. This fall, the season of fall, is the absolute perfect time to plant long-lived trees and shrubs. The survival rate for trees and big shrubs planted in the fall is much higher than in the springtime, because typically the plants that you get are already entering dormancy. And so you put them in the ground. They really don't go through any kind of transplant shock because they were already asleep and they're going to stay asleep.
That's what I saw on a gardening program. And then I thought, well, maybe this would be a good time to set them out.
Absolutely, because if you think about the springtime, a lot of times in the spring the soil is too wet to work. You got to wait. It gets a little late in the season. Meanwhile, you may have these trees sitting around bare root or in containers that you have to take care of. That's a very difficult thing for a non-professional to do. And then when you put them in the ground, summer is often right around the corner. And it's a very tricky maneuver to keep them evenly watered and protected and prevent them from having real serious transplant shock, which if it doesn't cost you the entire tree, can certainly set you back on the growth rate of that tree tremendously.
Yep.
Now, people have a lot of success this time of year going to nurseries and garden centers and picking out the plants they want. The advantages are just over the top. The nurseries and garden centers do not want to overwinter these plants. And so typically they will hold big sales around this time of year. And you get beautiful specimens for a fraction of the price you would pay in spring. The survival rate is going to be higher, and the nursery makes out because that's one less thing they have to worry about healing in somewhere in a field. But catalogs are different. Catalogs have real distinct shipping times, and I know catalogs will ship things like garlic and spring bulbs in the fall, but a lot of times live plants like trees, they will only ship in the spring. So the first thing I would suggest is, and you know hickory trees take a long time to bear, Jerry, right?
Oh, yeah, I know they're slow growing.
They're very slow growing, and they're very slow to bear their nuts, but it doesn't take long for the bark to get very attractive. A shagbark hickory is a beautiful tree. And
I'm not looking for these trees to bear for me. It's just on down the road.
Exactly. That's exactly right, sir. We plant these trees for the next generation. My first suggestion to you is to scout around local nurseries. You may have a tree farm near you. And obviously with a hickory tree, you want to buy the biggest specimen you can. You want to buy the one that's already been growing for a couple of years. So if you can buy it locally, you'd be helping out that local business, you'd get a great deal, and you could plant at the right time. Otherwise, if you have some catalogs in hand that you've been paging through, as soon as we're done with this call, you call them up right away and see if they will ship it to you now or if you would have to wait till the spring.
Okay.
All right, Jar, but if you can get the trees, this is the perfect time to plant them.
Okay.
All right, good luck, sir. Bye-bye. Well, it's time for me to take a little break and remind everybody out there who wants to be a successful organic gardener that collecting and shredding the fall leaves currently dropping from our deciduous trees is the beginning of it all. Once shredded, those leaves become the essential ingredient for compost making and the perfect mulch to apply now or in the spring. And shredded they must be, because dropping leaves whole is how big trees smother small plants. But don't you go setting that leaf blower on reverse just yet, because we'll be right back with more of your fabulous phone calls and a discussion of the unique ornamental, perhaps lawn substitute, known as Mondo grass. I'm Mike McGrath, and this is You Bet Your Garden.
You're listening to You Bet Your Garden on WHYY, 36 degrees and sleet in Philadelphia.
Mike McGrath right back at you with local events. Tonight is the last night for Halloween flashlight tours of the historically spooky and horticulturally important Laurel Hill Cemetery overlooking East River Drive. The hour-long tours of scary sights and roaming spirits begin at 7 p.m. tonight, with the last tour leaving at 9:30. On Saturday, November 12th, St. Paul's Church in Exton, PA, will hold their annual Angel Fest Fair fundraising event from 9 to 3, including participation by the Nancy Hollywood Community Garden and Wellness Center at St. Paul's Episcopal Church, home to community gardens, nutrition education, and a children's garden. We'll post all the details at the events section of our website, youbetyourgarden.org.
The WHYY forecast for today, rainy and windy and snowy most of the day. Philadelphia could see 2 inches of snow by the time this system wraps up. It is snowing right now in Westchester, 4.5 inches expected there. And it's snowing in Paoli, 6 inches expected there. In Pottstown, they could see 5 to 9 inches. Heading in the other direction towards South Jersey and the shore, a couple inches in the Burlington area, and then perhaps a dusting of snow at the beach. Right now in Center City, 36 degrees and sleeting.
Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden. I'm your host, Mike McGrath, and we're in the stretch now, cats and kittens. In just a little bit, we'll get to the question of the week. Mondo grass. It may not be a grass at all. Actually, I'll tell you right now, it is not. But it is perhaps an acceptable lawn substitute under certain conditions and an interesting ornamental to use in other places. We'll talk about Mondo grass, a.k.a. monkey grass, right after a couple more of your fascinating phone calls at 1-888-346-9499. Ann, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hello.
Hello, Ann. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I am doing just fine, thank you. Where is Ann good?
Lansdale, Pennsylvania.
Just outside of Philadelphia. Actually, it's little bit of a ride on the regional rail line, but you can get there from there.
Yes.
What can we do for Ann in Lansdale?
Well, this summer, kind of on a whim, my granddaughter and I planted some pumpkin seeds. And we got a pumpkin vine, a beautiful vine, and actually a couple small to medium-sized pumpkins. but they seem to be rotting on the vine before we can pick them. And if I wanted to do this more seriously next year, I was looking for a few pointers.
Okay, where'd you get your seeds?
Just at nursery.
Okay, so you bought a pack of seeds.
Yes.
What did it say they were? I know it said pumpkins, but... You...
Yeah, that's all I remember. I don't know, remember a specific variety or anything.
Well, the first thing, and you've learned that they are space hogs, that the vines go on forever. What did you plant them in? What kind of area?
It was a small area, and we dug a little hole, and then we put a little of the starter mix in there, and then put the seed in there and covered it up and kept it watered, and the vine took off. We had a lot of beautiful flowers and a couple fruit, but we didn't get a chance to pick them. The first one actually turned orange,
right?
But then started getting little moldy spots on it. And then the next one didn't even turn orange. It was just yellow.
Okay, when did you plant them?
It was in June sometime.
Okay, so it was a little late even.
Right.
Okay, that's good. That's good. That's fine. And you planted them in dirt, and they grew onto what, a lawn?
It was like a little garden bed on the side of the house.
And, but where did the vines go?
Just across the bed. And then we put... It started to go into the driveway, so we put up like a trellis, and
right.
climbed up the trellis.
Oh, very nice.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and well, next year, you essentially do the same thing. If you're going to plant directly from seed, you should probably put the seed in the ground certainly between May 15th and the end of May. Don't put any more of whatever you put in the hole in there again. Build up that garden bed with some compost.
Okay.
And really enrich that garden bed with a good inch of compost. Now, put the seed in the ground, and then, as you said, you know, water it. But when you water pumpkins, you want to water them deeply and infrequently. You don't want to give them, like, you know, 20 seconds of water every night. If it doesn't rain, if they don't get an inch of rain, then you want to really get a hose and just let it go drip, 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 and put it at the base of the plant and just leave that on for like an hour or two once a week.
Oh, okay.
And this fall, save up some leaves. Shred some leaves. Get a garbage bag, trash bag full of shredded leaves. And after the vine takes off, mulch the soil around the vine, not touching the vine itself, to retain the moisture in the soil. And then let the vine trail around, you know, trying, you know, to keep it out of the way. Trellising is a great idea. Now, you can get any size pumpkin you want. There are miniature pumpkins. People hope that the vines are well-behaved, but they're not. But the pumpkins are tiny and really cute, and they have a great success rate. The classic pumpkins for Halloween or pie making will be called jack-o'-lantern pumpkins. I'd like to grow a pumpkin that's a little larger than that, called Connecticut Field Classic Multi-Use Pumpkin. But stick to that size range. Once a pumpkin is 90% colored up, it's like a tomato. What you want to do is take it off the vine. You want to leave as much stem attached to the pumpkin as possible. Don't cut it close to the fruit, but cut it off the vine. Don't sever the vine if it's... you know, continuous thing, but leave that hook on the end of the pumpkin. And once it's 90% colored up, or even 80% colored up, you can bring it inside and it will color up completely. It will finish ripening inside, but where it's protected from the elements.
Okay.
And once you get two or three fruits on a vine, if you get more fruits forming after that, pinch them off.
Oh, okay.
Because the vine will produce more fruit than it can support. And if you want really nice specimens, once you get two or three really nice looking pumpkins, you don't let any other fruits form.
Okay.
All right?
All right. Well, thank you very much.
All right. Good luck in your pumpkin growing adventure next year.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
1-888-346-9499. Karen, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Thank you for taking my call, Mike.
Well, thank you for making it, Karen. Where are you?
I'm out of Olney, Oklahoma.
Olney. And where is that in relation to, say, our friends in Oklahoma City?
We are southeast of them. We're in southeastern Oklahoma.
Okay.
We're near East Central University in Ada, Oklahoma.
Okay.
And what I was calling today, I'd learned on your last show that there's a non-poisonous liquid so available for fighting bagworms. But before that, I had a terrible infestation of them, and I had pulled them all out of the tree and squished them around the base of the tree.
Mm-hmm.
And those bagworms did not come back for years.
So you're talking the fear of God remedy.
I think so. I think that the moths or whatever they came from flew by there and smelled that, perhaps. I don't know. That's my theory.
We have a predator in the house.
I think so. And I was wondering if you've ever heard of anything like that being done with fire ants.
Oh, do you have fire ant mounds?
Oh, we have terrible fire ants, and it's been very dry, so we haven't had very many this year, but we had a little bit of rain the last few days, and I've started having the ant piles come up in the yard.
Oh, man, and we have many listeners down south who are nodding their heads right now, but I think people in the north don't realize these ant colonies can create the kind of mounds you typically see on, like, a nature show.
Yeah, they're amazing. They can get so deep, especially down even further south. They can be 1 and 2 feet high.
And the ants inside have a venom that is very close, almost analogous to yellow jacket venom. So it not only hurts to get stung by a fire ant, they kill people. They kill livestock if they can overwhelm them.
They sure do. But I was wondering, I don't know, I've never read anything about anyone trying any of that. When you study an ant farm, you'll see that when one dies, they'll take it as far away from the nest as they can go.
So you're proposing killing a couple fire ants and putting them back near the mound to terrify the colony?
To make them want to move away, anyways. I don't know.
I wouldn't go there just because they're so dangerous. What I want you to do is go online, or you might even be able to find this at a hip independent garden center near you. And there is a two-step process for eliminating fire ant mounds. This was developed at, I believe, Texas A&M. And this combines orange oil. D-limonene is the active ingredient in orange peels. Tremendous insecticide. That's half of the organic two-step. The other half is a naturally occurring pesticide called spinosads that are actually found in soils and in compost piles. And the spinosads are sold under a variety of brand names. But the organic technique is so popular, I know one company at least bands the two products together, actually sells them in a combination. And you do a knockdown, I believe, with the Orange Guard, and then you sprinkle the spinosads around for long-term relief. But it is very effective. It's as effective as the chemical method, and I think the organic two-step is the way to go.
Okay. Well, I just really don't want to put more poison out. It seems like if you did a graph of everywhere you put poison in most people's yards down here, they would have a spot of poison in the entire graph everywhere.
I can understand the temptation to overreact when fire ants are around, especially if you have small pets or children.
Yes.
They are truly dangerous.
I mean, well, I am so glad to find out about this. I will certainly try this out.
It's a real godsend. We know it works. It's been heavily tested.
Okay. Well, thank you so much.
All right.
I'm going to try that out soon.
Good luck, Karen.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right, as promised, it's time for the question of the week. Let's monkey around with Mondo grass. Aaron in Hopewell, New Jersey, starts us off by writing, I've seen beautiful tufts of Mondo grass growing among flowers, shrubs, and trees in shopping center planters, and have admired the pretty purple flowers that bloom amidst the dark green blades. But the little purple flowers on the Mondo grass I have at home are puny, I have to really hunt to find them. And even though I cut my grass short every spring, the lush green leaves are encroaching on my other plants by summer. I'm also finding more and more other grasses growing among my mondo, and it's getting harder to keep those unwanted plants at bay. How do I properly grow this beautiful ornamental grass? Liz in Spotsylvania, Virginia adds, I would like to plant some type of mondo grass on a long, narrow, mostly shady slope that refuses to support regular grass. An article in the Washington Post mentioned it as an option for such locations. But I have beds on either side that I don't want the mondo grass to invade, have been Googling like mad, and can't find a definitive answer on how invasive the regular or dwarf varieties might eventually become. I'd prefer the regular variety because the height would look better between my beds, but would it be a safe choice? Well, mondo grass, often called monkey grass down south, is a member of the Ophiopogon genus of ground covers from Asia, specifically O. japonicus. It is tempting to call these plants ornamental grasses, but despite their appearance and common name, they're not grasses of any kind. They're members of the lily family and are closely related to the notorious lily of the valley, a ground cover beloved by many gardeners, but probably despised by many more for its invasive habit. Now, is this relationship a warning of potential invasiveness, or just an interesting botanical footnote? Let's begin the answer with a discussion of basic, normal-sized mondo grass. The leaves are dark green and look a lot like those of an ornamental grass. Although mondo grows in clumps, the clumps send out underground runners that spread laterally to gradually fill in the areas in between, giving the appearance, after a few years, of something a bit like a lawn. The basic type grows to around 8 inches in height, but the leaves tend to bow down, giving it a shorter appearance and leading to a more full lawn-like look. Mondo grass lawns need no mowing, tolerate pretty deep shade, and are very drought-resistant. Mondo grass is also widely used to fill in areas between pavers and stepping stones. The dwarf varieties, named versions of O. japonicus that range in height from a tidy 2 to 4 inches, are especially good at this. Now, you'd think that grass-like plants that size would make a perfect lawn substitute, but dwarf mondo is notoriously slow to spread, and you'd have to plant them as thick as sod to keep weeds from overwhelming them in a big lawn-like planting. Although it's most widely used as a ground cover in shady areas, sources tend to call mondo a, quote, sun or shade plant. But as I've explained in the past, full sun means different things depending on where you live, and the garden experts at Southern Living magazine, who know a lot more about hot weather gardening than I do, warn not to plant mondo in areas that receive a fair amount of hot direct sun. Now, the flowers that are lusted after by our New Jersey listener appear on very short spikes, and these flowers are generally lost inside the leaves. So I'm guessing that placement had a lot to do with her shopping center experience. Mondo grass that's planted higher, in a container or a dramatically raised bed, will appear to have more visible flowers, as will individual specimens that don't have the leaves of other plants overlapping them. This is much easier to achieve in a commercial bed that's probably planted fresh every year. Now, the annual mowing she mentions is also probably detracting from its potential appearance, as well as opening it up to weed invasion, and maybe even forcing it to spread faster into those unwanted areas. But the habit of basic mondo grass is to slowly spread, and if she wants it to stay exactly where she plants it, she needs to install edging around the desired area of plants, or tear out what she has and replace it with a similar but black-bladed cousin that doesn't move around. That would be so-called black mondo grass, which, despite its common name, is a different species of plant within the Ophiopogon genus. The leaves are about as close to true black as you'll see in the plant world, and it grows about as tall as true Mondo grass, but it doesn't spread much at all, behaving a lot more like a true ornamental grass. So it wouldn't fill in to give you a black lawn. Sorry, Adams Family fans. Black Mondo can also be grown a little further north than regular Mondo grass, which is frost hardy but won't survive a far northern winter. Black Mondo grass may also be the best choice for Liz near D.C., who wants height but not spread. Otherwise, some decent edging should be enough to keep the basic type where she wants it. Because while it does spread, I wouldn't call Mondo grass invasive or aggressive. Ah, but some other members of the genus, like Aztec grass, are aggressive and highly invasive. Be careful you don't get one of them mislabeled as Mondo. Well, that sure was an interesting look at the wide world of plants in the Mondo grass family now, wasn't it? Luckily for yous, this and every question of the week appears in print at the Gardens Alive website. To read this week's excellent advice in detail, just click the link at our website, youbetyourgarden.org. Yikes! My producer is threatening to sacrifice me to Aztec grass if I don't get out of this studio. Ha ha! Be still my beating heart. Oh, wait a minute. Aztec beating heart. Hey, we must be out of time. But you can call us anytime at 1-888-346-9499 or send us your email, your tired, your poor, your wretched refuse teeming towards our garden shore at garden@whyy.org. Please tell us where you live. Please put the actual subject in the subject line. And please check Foist to see if the information you seek is already waiting for you at our website, youbetyourgarden.org, where you can click through to the question of the week, find the solution to hundreds of garden problems, hint, hint, just like yours, hint, hint, in our Garden Answers A to Z section. And or listen to this show, listen to old shows, and or download this week's podcast. Elizabeth Perez Luna is executive producer of audio content for WHYY. Ken Queter plays our theme song. Our engineer this week is Kevin, don't call me Merv, Griffin. Our webmasters are Baneful Rich Banowitz and Sarah the She-Devil Kazar. Mondo Alexis Landis produces You Bet Your Garden for WHYY-FM in Philadelphia. Our intern Julia Worski does not monkey around. Our only slightly invasive editor is Al Banks. I'm your Mondo monkey, Mike McGrath, and I'll slowly fill in and see you next week. Many dogwoods produce beautiful and enticing fruit-like structures after they flower. I'm Mike McGrath, and on the next thrilling episode of You Bet Your Garden, we'll examine the edibility of dogwood fruit. Plus your fabulous phone calls.
Mondo grass, mulberry, marigolds, melon, Mike's madcap monkey shines reveal the way to a marvelous garden.